This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, heard Sunday mornings at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
The world doesn't need another sports show. It needs an awesome sports show. You're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Good morning, Naz. Good morning, Wally. The boys are back. Let's talk sports.
Good morning and welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. I'm your host, Walter Rigabon. Joining me as usual, my co-host, Naz Marchese. Good morning, Naz. How are you?
Good, Wally. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you. Also joining us this morning, former Washington Capital, Toronto Maple Leaf, and big Alabama Crimson Tide fan. I had to throw that one in. Leaping Lou Franceschetti. Good morning, Lou. How are you?
Good morning, guys. Yeah, I'm still recovering from last night.
As our, many of our listeners know, Naz, my co-host, and Lou, our frequent guest on the show, are big Alabama Crimson Tide fans. And are you guys, did you guys survive yesterday? Are your pacemakers still in place to let our listeners know?
I have one, and it's still in place, Wally.
Talk about crazy, crazy, crazy endings to a football game. Guys, correct me if I'm wrong. If I think I got this right, Alabama was fourth and goal from the 31-yard line with not that much left in the game. We're down to the short strokes. Basically, they need a touchdown or the game's over. And somehow the football gods, as they always seem to do, they smiled on Alabama. Naz, your thoughts, and then I'll turn it over to Lou.
I thought it was a loss, Wally. I really did. I can't believe it. Alabama seems to do this all the time, though, right? If you look back, many times they had the last play of the game or an impossible task, and they do it. So next week they play Georgia. So let's see what happens there.
And if I was George, I'd be a little bit nervous right now. This is the traditional game against Auburn. They're in-state rivals or in-state rivals, correct? It's called the Iron Bowl. They've been doing it for a long time. I think this time, Lou, Alabama turned the tables a little bit on Auburn because I sort of remember a game. You remember that game about I don't know how many years ago where. Alabama tried to kick a field goal on the last play of the game, and Auburn ran back for a touchdown. So I guess this was sort of Alabama getting even a little bit, wasn't it, Lou?
Well, yeah, you had to bring that up, even though I've been watching that for the whole week now. I'm not sure if it's a pick six or the. Anyways, what happened on that play is we didn't know how much time was going to be on the clock. And Saban convinced the referees that there was 1 second left on the clock, so Alabama decides to take a long.
You're talking about the game from a few years back, right now.
Yes, I am. I'm talking about it's a 10-year anniversary of that game.
Oh, is it 10 years? Okay.
Yes, it's a 10-year anniversary. That's why last night was almost like deja vu because Alabama dominated the game, but Auburn just stuck in because they had a great ground game. So Alabama punts with about a minute left yesterday, and the Auburn receiver fumbles the ball with about I think two and a half minutes left. But anyways, yeah, it's you're first and goal from the 8-yard line. You end up being fourth and 31, and it was a miraculous. I just I almost fell over here watching that game because it was like the reverse of 10 years ago when the guy missed the field goal and he ran it back 110 yards to win the game.
This only happens in college football, guys.
Yeah, that's why American college football is so fascinating to watch. I mean, fourth and 31. It just and the Alabama guy somehow gets behind the Auburn defender. I don't know how he gets open, but he does. He makes
Wally, the fumble at the on the long snap where he wasn't looking, and I thought they got the Argo bounce there. He got it back. Quarterback. So, my God,
the infamous Argo bounce. Anyways, it's at this time of year, and the Saturday after American Thanksgiving certainly gets interesting in college football down in the States. You got traditional rivalries, Ohio State, Michigan. What a remarkable game there as well. That game could have gone either way. I'm not going to say that I thought Ohio State blew the game. I give all credit in the world to Michigan, but I think it's a game Ohio State could have won. And now we're talking about college football playoff. We've got Alabama and Georgia in the SEC championship next Saturday, which is going to be a phenomenal game. And I'm going to obviously the winner of that game is going to go through to the college football playoff. Michigan. I got to think they're going to win their Big Ten title. I think it's Iowa they get next Saturday. Correct me if I'm wrong, guys, please.
Yeah, it's Iowa.
So the early morning rankings this morning, Michigan has bumped Georgia off number one from what I've seen. But you get all kinds of different ranking agencies down in the States. I'm sure there'll be some that have got Georgia one, Michigan maybe number one. Those are the 2-1A and 1-B right now, and they control their own fate. And then this Oregon team dusted a pretty good Oregon State team yesterday. Washington looks pretty good. Florida State still undefeated. And you got Alabama and Texas. Man, this is gonna be a tough decisions for the college football committee. This one, Naz.
Well, just clarify something. Are Georgia able to get in there with a loss to Alabama next Saturday?
It's possible. Lou, I'll let you comment on that. It's up to the – I mean, these aren't automatic qualifications. You've got a committee that has to rank all these teams. They're going to look at a zillion different factors. And if Georgia loses against Alabama, and they've got to go in, and Michigan's unbeaten. You know, Washington gets in if they're unbeaten. Oregon's – they look fantastic. Let's put it this way. It's not guaranteed. A lot of it depends on how they lose as well. Right, Lou?
It is, but you know what? They're going to need some help from the other teams to probably end up a couple of losses there. But it's funny because and this is a scenario. If Alabama knocks off Georgia, okay, does Alabama go ahead of Georgia? Because Texas beat Alabama by 10 points. And right now the big sticking point is that game that Alabama's playing Texas. Because Alabama should be ranked a little bit farther ahead than they are, but they can't be ranked ahead of Texas because they lost by 10 points to them. So there's going to be a lot of style points. I think if Georgia loses, I don't think that they're going to drop further than fourth in the college rankings because of what happens in all the other games. Alabama could. There's no way Alabama's going to move from 8 to 3. The only way Alabama's going to go in there is they're going to go to fourth. So we'll see what happens. It's going to be another crazy weekend next weekend. Just like it was this weekend, I'm all up for it. I think Alabama's got a great chance to knock off Georgia because it's Kirby Smart against Nick Saban, and Saban's had great success against Georgia, except for that national championship game a few years ago. Mind you, we didn't have our two top receivers that game. After we lost them, we beat them in the SEC championship. So it's going to be another great weekend next weekend.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it depends on the committee and how they look at these things. I sort of discount early season losses, and I sort of look at the recent body of work from the major teams. And, if you look at it from that perspective, Alabama beats Georgia. you know, they could go all the way, as they say. You know, and then is this the last year for the 4-team college football? When are they going to 12 teams? Is that next year? Yeah, so a lot of these discussions that we have are going to be academic. I don't think too many people are going to start arguing about whether you get in, whether you're 14th, 13th, or 11th. So though these discussions, this is going to be the last year for that. On this note, we're going to go to break shortly. Just wanted to say, guys, Notre Dame got a victory yesterday. Dusted off Stanford. Didn't mean much. Finished 9-3. Not a great Notre Dame season, but not a terrible one either. I think they probably finished exactly where their expectations were. I think the expectations might have been a little bit higher. But talent-wise and adjustment-wise and what they're going through there with Marcus Freeman getting his feet on the ground, unfortunate loss against Ohio State earlier on in the year with 10 men on the field on the key play at the end of the game. But overall, you know, we'll see what kind of a bowl game we go to. It might be interesting. We might get LSU in a bowl game. That should certainly be interesting if the Irish go up against Brian Kelly. But overall, I would just say about exactly where Notre Dame deserves to be. So we'll leave it at that. We're going to take it to break just to let our listeners know where we're going with the show today. We're coming back with Soccer Hall of Famer Carmen and Marc Antonio, Canadian Soccer Hall of Famer Carmen and Marc Antonio. A really disappointing loss by the Canadian men's national soccer team that has going to have some significant reverberations with respect to their program. Where they go forward, they've lost an opportunity to be in a Nations League tournament next year, and now they've got to fight tooth and nail to make the Copa America, which these are two really important program tournaments for the program. We'll talk to Carmine about what went wrong. Haven't talked much Raptors talk this year. The Raptors have been sort of an up-and-down season, and expectation-wise, they're probably exactly where you would expect. And who better than Leo Routens to talk Mr. Canada basketball? We'll talk to him about that. We got a few minutes later on, and let's take a couple of minutes right now, guys. Toronto Maple Leafs. We'll take 2-3 minutes before we go to break. Not too great results at the end of the week. Good results in Sweden. Came back from that on a bit of a high. Lose in overtime to Chicago. Lose to our new enemy, the Pittsburgh Penguins. Leafs are right now fighting for a wild card. Quarter of the way in the season. Naz, your thoughts.
Well, with this defense, I don't know how far they're going to go because defense has played awful. Awful. And who invented this breakout in the slot anyway? McCabe throws one right to Matthews in the slot on a breakout pattern, right? And costs up a puck, and they score the tying goal. Unbelievable.
Yeah, Lou, let me tell you my concern about the Leafs, and I know we sometimes take criticism for jumping on them way too early, but, you know, American Thanksgiving seems to be a measuring stick when you're evaluating, and let me put my assessment of the Leafs this way. I see a lot of teams in the league that have taken a step up. You look at the Rangers, you look at the Kings, you look at the Canucks, you look at Detroit. Those teams are all better than last year. Can we actually say the Leafs are better than last year at this point?
No. And they didn't make the proper changes in the summer to elevate this team. Because we knew at the end of every year, you're giving 32 teams a chance to get better. And what the other teams that below them have done, one, because they're younger, and two, because they're getting the higher draft choices, they're getting a lot better. We're talking about the Buffaloes, the Detroits, all the teams that didn't make the playoffs by a few points. And I don't think the Leafs did enough due diligence to – and obviously they did have a big change with Trevelyan coming in, so he really didn't have enough time. But they didn't make the changes that they had to, and mainly it was on the back end. You just can't live on your – top four players forever. And Marner's not having a Marner-type year. So there's a lot of rumors out there of what's going on with him. Maybe it's the mustache. Maybe he should just get rid of that and
come on
December 1st.
It's a nice little shot.
You know what?
It's not the mustache. Come on. I think your assessment is correct. He's not having the season he should be having for his salary scale and for the quality of the player that he is. So I think that's a fair comment. No question. If the Leafs are going to, you know, get into the upper echelon, Mitch Marner has to be the Mitch Marner that his talent level suggests and what he should be. No question about that. So, the criticism of him to this point, if he's fighting off injuries, I don't know, but he doesn't seem like the same player. And I don't know. Go ahead, Ned.
Kelly Rudy last night pointed out how his reaction on the ice is with Marner, and he looks like he's whining a bit. And that's a problem. If you're whining like that, you're not going to be able to perform. So he's got to get better at it and accept the criticism that comes to him. Nylander accepted his, and he look what he's done, right?
Yeah, I think those are fair comments, Nez, and certainly he's got an obligation as leader of this team, as one of the core four. He's got to elevate his game. He's got to figure it out. And between him and the coaching staff, they have to figure it out. On that note, guys, we're going to take it to break. We're going to talk about a big disappointment down at BMO this week. The Canadian National Men's Soccer Team lost to Jamaica. And that has created a whole series of other events or consequences. And who better than Canadian Soccer Hall of Famer Kahneman and Marc Antonio to break it down for us. We'll be right back.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville declared, "We'll never be the fastest. We'll never be the cheapest. We'll never be the snazziest dressed."
What?
Yeah, my point is, we want to be the best. At Pizzaville, we want to make the best pizza. Stone-baked, the traditional Italian way.
Pizzaville, stone-baked pizza. Fiercely Canadian. Authentically Italian.
Passion. It drives athletes, entrepreneurs, family businesses, and fast-growing companies. It's also what inspires KPMG Enterprise to help drive success. A dedicated audit, tax, law, and advisory practice, KPMG Enterprise delivers ideas and insights. Whether you want to grow your business, embrace technology, plan for an exit, or manage the transition of wealth, search KPMG Enterprise, understanding what it takes to make your business even better.
There are lawyers at Miller Thompson who know your industry. They'd like to introduce you to theirs. It starts with relationships. It's not just about happy clients. They support thriving business partners. Miller Thompson infuses law with the same tenacity you bring to your work, whether supporting your daily operations or offering urgent legal advice. But that's enough about them. Let's talk about you. Visit MillerThompson.com and find out how they can move your business forward.
We all value our sporting heroes. But what price would you put on one in mint condition? If you ask us, you'll get an honest answer. Mint Inc., trading cards and sports merchandise, is looking to buy your vintage collection of hockey, basketball, baseball, football, and soccer heroes. Come and see us in person at our new Toronto Mint Inc. Gallery at 198 Davenport, east of Avenue Road, or visit our store online at mintink.ca. Show us what you got, and we'll show you the money. Think Mint Inc.
Play ball!
In baseball, winning takes nine. On the ice, you need six working together towards a common goal. Whereas success in sports radio requires a team of two who don't always agree. Venture Construction Services congratulates the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on 10 years of telling it like it is. More than friends of the show, they're fans who want to see Naz and Wally succeed for as long as Venture Construction has. Almost 30 years. Three cheers for the winning team of Naz and Wally.
They're not here to be nice. They're here to be right. The boys are back. The Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live on AM 740 in downtown Toronto, 96.7 FM, and streaming on the internet at www.zoomerradio.ca. We're pleased to welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour our good friend, Canadian Soccer Hall of Famer, Carmine Marcantonio. Carmine, good morning. How are you this morning?
Hey, Walter. I'm well, thank you. Good morning to you and to everyone listening.
Yeah, just thanks for joining us, Carmine. Just so you know, they're going to get a bunch of voices thrown at you this morning. Of course, my co-host, Naz Marchese, and our frequent guest on the show, Lou Franceschetti. So you got a bunch of guys throwing it at you today, Carmine. Anyways,
all right,
Carmine,
okay, good to listen to you.
Let's get right into it. Very, very disappointing loss. Although I will say we were happy Italy won. They sort of backpedaled their way into the Euro. But my focus this week was on the Canadian men's national soccer team. An incredibly disappointing loss against Jamaica. A game that meant so much to the program over the course of the next year. And they came in after, you know, after beating Jamaica 2-1 in Jamaica last week. Come back to BMO, a place that Canada beat Jamaica 4-0 to qualify for the World Cup. And it all fell apart in the second half. And it was extremely, extremely disappointing. The consequences are Canada's not qualified now for the 2024 Nations League Finals in Texas next year. And we have to go through a qualification match to qualify for the Copa America. I believe it's against Trinidad and Tobago. Serious consequences for the program. Carmine, what went wrong?
Yeah, I think you summed it up pretty well there, Walter. I think the first half was, I thought, was played well on Tuesday, November 21st. And they could have had, besides a goal by Davis, Alfonso scored their first goal, and they could have had 2-3 on the first half with the goalie Blake that plays in the MLS with Philadelphia. Yeah, I thought he was outstanding in the first half, and then everything collapsed in the second half. You know the way sports are, right? I think sometimes you take a foot off the pedal there in the second half. Some changes maybe by Mauro Biello. That is only is in this third game in charge from John Herdman. So he's a bit of a new coach, even though he's been with the program as an assistant to John Herdman. So something didn't go right. And my analysis of what went wrong is always defense win games. And Canada, unfortunately, lately is conceding too many goals, and that is not going to win many games, and that's exactly what happened in the second half. Jamaica outplayed Canada. They deserved the win because they scored 3. It could have been 4, even though must be said that the third goal against Eustáquio, I thought the penalty was harsh. The end ball that was called against Eustáquio was harsh. 2-2, you know, they could have squeezed in the finals of the Nations Cup and then automatically getting the berth for Copa America. Now it's complicated. But nothing is compromised because I think it's, winning against Trinidad and Tobago, as you said, next March is going to give him the opportunity to play in Copa America. And that's huge, you know, to build towards the 2026 World Cup.
Naz,
how much of the situation, Carmen, is the two coaches? The coaches being the coach going to Toronto FC, and then the other guy is the assistant now, and it's a lot of turmoil, I think, with the coaching staff, right?
Yeah, Naz, you know, I think you hit the nail right on the head. I think Canada, I'm talking about the CSA now, has had some issues with leadership leading to the World Cup.
They've had financial difficulties. No leadership right now that I know of. I don't even know who the new president is of the CSA. That tells you all. The women had problem with the CSA. The men had problem leading up to the World Cup. And obviously, Herdman going away, I think he was the steady one, you know, the one that steadied the team. And, you know, he's a great motivator. We know John Herdman did quite a bit for the program. And I believe Mauro Biello obviously doesn't have the personality that and also the expertise that John Herdman has in playing in this competition. So I feel that the players have somewhat not been together as a family. They're not playing together as a team, maybe because of John Herdman, leaving the team. Mauro Biello's got a big job to compact the team again, play as a family, as a, you know, they always say that we're all brotherhood type of thing. Canada, that's why they won CONCACAF and qualified for the World Cup, because they played as a unit. They're not doing that now. They're doing it at moments, like the first half, and then they collapse. I was watching the highlights against Japan, which was in October, the first game that Mauro Biello played, and they conceded four goals. They conceded three goals against Jamaica and at home. So they did a lot of turnovers. They're not steady. They're not playing as a team. And that's a problem, I think, that starts from the CSA. Nas, you said it right. Herdman is a big loss, I feel.
Lou? Do you think there's problems inside that team there, Kadmine, with players thinking that certain players shouldn't be playing at certain times of the game, and they're taking it upon themselves to doing a little bit too much, and then when they don't get calls going with them, they more or less go after the officials?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the players, I think, have to, you know, they have accountability, Lou, as you know. I mean, a lot of these players now are playing at top level in Europe. I mean, Alphonso Davies with Bayern Munich, David is with Lille, but they're talking about him going for a move to AC Milan in January. We got Buchanan playing in Belgium in the first division. We have also Lehmann playing in La Liga, and also some of them, I think, how you say, you know, the head got a bit swollen, I feel, right? And then they think they're above the team, you know, some of them, okay? I was watching some highlights, and it's amazing how easily the turnovers, you know, they're basically getting punished because of the turnovers. And when that happens, it's because they're not playing as a unit, you know, they're not playing together. They're not giving that extra yard that was the case, and that's why I believe was their success. If you take that away from a Canadian team, or not only any team, if the work ethic has to be there 90 minutes, the moment if they, at this level, if there's any lapses, and that's happening more and more, you know, with the highlights I saw, it's you know, the last three games, they've given up a lot, and I think that's a problem that the players have to sort out. They have to compact again as a team, be humble about it, and not thinking that just because they're playing, you know, Bayern Munich, with Bayern Munich, you know, that they just need to show up. No, it doesn't happen that way. You know, Alfonso's got to be a leader and be very humble about it, and so the rest of the team, they got to have leadership out there that are going to lead by example, and I don't think that's happening lately, anyhow.
Yeah, I think there's some changes that have to be made here. And not so much necessarily in the talent. What I found distressing about the game, there was a certain, I don't know if cockiness is the word, or maybe overconfidence, the way they played that second half. They had Jamaica exactly where they needed to have them. And then they came out and they played I didn't think it was technically a sound game in the second half. Yeah. You've got a lead. You know, and then on one of the Jamaican goals, there were like eight Canadian players got caught up the field, and it was Jamaica's 4-on-2. And I'm saying, like you're that's the evidence of a team that's way overconfident. I mean, you know, we're not in the upper echelon of world soccer. Let's be honest. And when you start, I am not use the word disrespecting in a personal sense, but I thought they disrespected the capacity of the Jamaican team to come back, and they played a tactically, I found, inferior game in the second half. And you know what? Whether you like it or not, I've got no grudge against Coach Mauro Biello from a personal point of view. I'm not convinced he's the right guy for this program. And they've got to make some changes quickly. You know, you don't want to lose the opportunity to play in the Copa America. It's your opportunity to play against Argentina, against Brazil, against Uruguay, against Colombia. We've got a World Cup coming to Canada in almost 2 years. And we've got to turn this program around quickly, because since we left Qatar or Qatar, whatever it's called, the program's been in a bit of turmoil. They haven't solved their ongoing labor dispute. They haven't solved their upper management issues. A 4-1 loss to Japan, and apparently they couldn't play an extra friendly because they didn't have the money, from the reports that I read. So, Kadmina, you know, there's not a lot of time to play with here. They've got to turn this around and turn it around quickly, and the eyes better focus on whether Mauro Biello is the right man for the job. I'm not convinced he is. I really am not. Perhaps he's a good assistant coach, and maybe he can stay on in that role. I think he was sort of thrown the job because the other guy just resigned unexpectedly. Your comments, Kadmina.
No, I mean, you said it right. I think the program is in a bit of a bit upside down, and since the World Cup, to be honest with you, because like you said, I think you hit it right on when you're saying that the balance of the team has to be constant all the time. You can't go forward all the time against Croatia. Look what happened. Canada went up in the World Cup, went up 1-0, and you keep playing. The same type of game, but there's two phases in the game. There's the defensive phase and the offensive phase. You can't always, you need to attack, yes, sometimes with 6-7 players and sometimes even 8 players. But the moment you lose that ball, you got to be goal side. You got to run. You got to work your butt off to be defensive. So there's a defensive mind that's where it's breaking down. A lot of times it's also breaking down, as I said, because of the turnover. And that tells me players that may not be focused enough and playing as a unit because of lack of games. And with a new coach, there's a lot of breakdowns that then will result in goals against you. I mean, they're conceding way too many goals against for a team that, yes, it's got good talent, but defensively, I mean, Johnson, is playing with Celtic. I think he's a good defender. But then Cornelius, I don't know about Cornelius because, he's playing in Norway or somewhere. I'm not sure about him. He's a young defender, but he's just got into the team. So Miller, I think he's good with Miami, but he's a bit on the slow side. And then you got Larea that likes to go forward, So defensively, but the defense is not the defensive line. The defense starts from the forwards. The forwards have to track back. And against Jamaica, you're right. They're up 1-0. Next thing you know, they got 3 goals in the back of their net because they're not doing the job, tracking back and defending. You cannot concede a counterattack with, you mentioned, was 6 versus 3 in the back. Mauro's got a big job. I know Mauro Biello. I think Mauro knows the program. I don't think Canada CSA has got the money, like you said, Walter, to get a big coach, somebody international with an international pedigree, because I don't think they got the money to do that. But Mauro has to be compact and think defense first. When you don't have the ball, everybody should go back and defend well. And then, obviously, when you get the ball, you got to go forward. That's the thing. Mauro has to recompact this team. Is he the right man to lead this team? We'll see. I think at the end of the day, Trinidad and Tobago, we don't have the time. He's got to show it against Trinidad and Tobago, because I think this is the biggest game ever in Canadian football history. because you mentioned Copa America. You're talking about Argentina, Brazil playing with these big nations. And they got to win in any shape or form that game in Texas in March 2024.
Yeah, it's really a shame. And I'll turn over to Naz for a last quick comment. Really a shame that the Canadian soccer program finds itself in a monetary constrained position, given the success of the program over the last couple of years. The last thing you would think is that this program would have difficulty with its finances. I don't want to get into the details of that. That's been reported in a lot of different places. There's historic reasons going back to previous management. Naz, we've got to move on. Last quick comment or question for Kadmina.
How will Herdman do with Toronto FC, Carmen?
You know, John, as I said, he's a great motivator, and he's shown that he could, you know, with the national teams of the women and the Canadian men national team, that he could bring a good brand of football, okay? So the only thing with Herdman, I would say he learned a big lesson, I think, in the World Cup, is to be a bit more humble. And, you know, the Croatia thing was a big mistake on his part, okay? And, you know, playing Belgium and playing Croatia and thinking that you're going to outscore them 5-4, it ain't going to happen with Canada. Yeah, as I just mentioned before. So I think he learned a lot of lessons in the World Cup, and I got confidence that John is going to do well with TFC. I mean, for him, it was a career change, and I don't blame him leaving the program, you know, the Canadian program, because he wanted to have a new challenge for his career. But yeah, I think he's going to do well with TFC. I'm hoping that you know, they have to make the playoff. Otherwise, it's going to be another failure in 2024. So John has got all the tools to get the team ready and compete again. I'm confident that's going to happen. And I'm confident that Mauro Biello is going to do the job also for Canada and qualifying the team for Copa America.
Anyways, Kadmina, we're going to let you go. We want to thank you. Thanks for joining us. And certainly we'll keep an eye on the Canadian men's national soccer program. We hope they qualify for Copa America. We've got the World Cup coming up in 2026, part of which is in Canada. And if we want to move this program to a different level, we may never be in Argentina or Brazil, but we'd like to get to the point where we can compete against them on the field. And the only way you're going to do that is if you keep playing against them in games that matter. This is critical, yes. As you say. We've got to get to the Copa America. Kadmina, thanks so much for joining us.
All right, take care, guys. Have a good weekend. Great Sunday. Bye.
We're going to take it to break. We're going to come back with Mr. Canada Basketball, Leo Routens. We'll be right back.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville declared,
we'll never be the fastest. We'll never be the cheapest. We'll never be the snazziest dressed.
What?
Yeah, my point is, we want to be the best.
At Pizzaville, we want to make the best pizza. Stone-baked, the traditional Italian way.
Pizzaville, stone-baked pizza. Fiercely Canadian, authentically Italian.
There are lawyers at Miller Thompson who know your industry. They'd like to introduce you to theirs. It starts with relationships. It's not just about happy clients. They support thriving business partners. Miller Thompson infuses law with the same tenacity you bring to your work, whether supporting your daily operations or offering urgent legal advice. But that's enough about them. Let's talk about you. Visit MillerThompson.com and find out how they can move your business forward.
We all value our sporting heroes. But what price would you put on one in mint condition? If you ask us, you'll get an honest answer. Mint Inc. Trading Cards and Sports Merchandise is looking to buy your vintage collection of hockey, basketball, baseball, football, and soccer heroes. Come and see us in person at our new Toronto Mint Inc. Gallery at 198 Davenport, east of Avenue Road, or visit our store online at mintink.ca. Show us what you got, and we'll show you the money. Think Mint Inc.
Passion. It drives athletes, entrepreneurs, family businesses, and fast-growing companies. It's also what inspires KPMG Enterprise to help drive success. A dedicated audit, tax, law, and advisory practice, KPMG Enterprise delivers ideas and insights. Whether you want to grow your business, embrace technology, plan for an exit, or manage the transition of wealth, search KPMG Enterprise, understanding what it takes to make your business even better.
Play ball!
In baseball, winning takes nine. On the ice, you need six working together towards a common goal. Whereas success in sports radio requires a team of two who don't always agree. Venture Construction Services congratulates the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on 10 years of telling it like it is. More than friends of the show, they're fans who want to see Naz and Wally succeed for as long as Venture Construction has. Almost 30 years. Three cheers for the winning team of Naz and Wally.
There are two ways to argue sports with these guys, and none of them work. The boys are back, the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live on AM 740 in downtown Toronto, 96.7 FM. Streaming on the internet at zoomerradio.ca. We're pleased to welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour the voice of basketball in Canada, Leo Routens. Good morning, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. How are you guys doing this morning?
We're doing fantastic. Thanks for holding, Leo. We had you on for a while. Our commercial breaks seem to be getting longer, so I guess
You got to get the money in.
Leo, I don't think we've had a chance to talk to you since the Raptors season started, so we want to catch up. Thanksgiving Day seems to be a dividing line in seasons, gives us a chance to catch up. Where are the Raptors at? The Raptors are at 8-8. Expectations, I would suggest, is probably where we would have expected them to be. They've had some great performances this year. Some of the players seem to have made some progress. Leo, we want to take the opportunity of getting your opinions on the Raptors' season so far and where they are and some of the performances of some of their players.
Well, I think it's about, as you said, probably about where you would expect, given the fact that, there's been some changes personnel-wise, new coach, and so forth. So, and I think they're trending in the right direction. To be at 500 right now, they've had kind of a difficult start as far as schedule goes. They've played some of the top teams. And, I think they're in a spot now where if they can continue to trend upwards, if they can continue to understand, Darko, the new coach's system and, what he's trying to accomplish, and it seems they're getting a good grasp of that. And certain players like Pascal Siakam are taking their game up a level and doing it consistently. So, if that continues, I think this team is better than last year's team and could be a playoff team if all this happens.
Naz?
Leo, are you surprised at their offensive play this year? They go from a defensive team last year to an offensive team this year. Is it the coaches or is it this the best style they should be playing?
No, I wouldn't say they're an offensive team. Their offense is just different. They're not going to win anything unless they guard. So I think that's first and foremost that you have to be a good defensive team, and they have the capability to be a very good defensive team when they want to be. The question is, can you consistently bring that effort every single game? The offense, it's just a different style. It's a little bit more European. It's quicker. It's all about quicker decision making. You want to catch and, shoot, pass, dribble right away. You got to anticipate what you're doing. You want to have movement. You want to have, the ball moving from side to side, attacking. And you want to generate a lot of points off of your defense, which is no different than, any other team would like to do. So it's just about understanding what he's trying to do and how everybody fits. So it's not that, they're an offensive team versus a defensive team. They have to be both if they want to be successful.
We're talking to Leo Routens. Leo, I'm going to turn it over to Lou Franceschetti, who has joined us this morning. Lou, your opportunity to speak to Leo.
Good morning, Leo. Is the coaching style different? Is that why they've gotten off to such a slow start at the beginning of games? The games that I've watched, they seem to fall behind early, and then and they make a great comeback as the game goes on. And what is Pascal Siakam's status with the team moving forward? Will he be here for the rest of the rest of the year? And why is that reason there?
Well, first of all, it's the slow starts. You can't. I don't care who's coaching. You know, you can't blame what you're trying to do and so forth. That comes down to the players. Players got to play. Players got to be ready to play. And I'm a little concerned in that, you know, with two different coaches, two different point guards, it's still something that happens. And so you start to look at your key players, right? It comes down to your key guys because they influence what everybody else does. So you're looking at OG, Pascal, and Scotty Barnes. You know, you could throw Jakob Poeltl in there. Dennis Schroeder just got here, so that's a little different. But your core guys, how they respond, how they play, how they come out to play, their readiness dictates what happens. And, you know, and that's been an issue, you know, for the last, you know, you have offensive droughts, you have slow starts, things like that. So I'm sure that's something that Masai and Bobby Webster are looking at as they evaluate this team going forward. But like I did say, like it's starting to trend a little bit upwards, and you have to hope that that continues. Otherwise, you really have to take a look because, again, this is not something that's just the start of this season. This is something that's concerned me now for, you know, more than a couple of seasons. So, and the, as far as Pascal goes, that's an interesting dynamic. You know, Masai really doesn't, you know, share his thoughts on, you know, what's going on in terms of, you know, moving players or trades and that sort of thing. And, you know, again, going back to what I just finished saying, you've kind of sat in a certain area, you've kind of plateaued in a certain way on how you play. Pascal's capable of dropping 25 points any night against anybody. You don't always get it, and it's a concern. Like I said, he's kind of moving in the right direction. But between him, OG, and maybe several other players, there's certainly options to move them. And there's going to be demand. And you're going to have to decide whether what they give you is what you want moving forward, because you're going to have to pay a hefty price to keep, as far as like Pascal and OG goes, you're going to have to pay a hefty price to keep them. So there's some big decisions ahead for management as far as where these guys are going to, you know, whether they fit in the long-term picture of the franchise.
Talking to Leo Routens. Leo, I'm an old-timer, and we're on Zoomer Radio here. I'm still trying to figure out the permutations of this so-called in-season tournament. What's the explain to me what the NBA is trying to achieve with having an in-season tournament, and whether those expectations have been met.
Well, in its simplest terms, I mean, it's common in Europe, right? When I was in Italy, I played in the Italian Cup. When I was in Spain, it was a Copa del Rey. So it's a very common thing in Europe. The only difference is in Europe, it's extra games. Here in the NBA, there's only one extra game. If you go to the finals and you're in the championship in Las Vegas, that's one extra game. And it doesn't count in the regular season. It counts for the championship, but not for the regular season. So it's not any additional stress or workload on the players. And I think what the intent originally is to take a Tuesday and a Friday night, add a little bit more significance to those games, because there's been a lot of talk, you know, the schedules, you know, maybe shorten the schedule, do this, do that, load management, get players not to, you know, players are playing too much, all this kind of garbage. So it's a way to add a little something. So there's incentive. You know, you win, each player, you know, gets $500,000 or whatever it is. You have this, you know, this championship, an in-season championship, which is, you know, something to hang your hat on. For the fans, you get to talk about something a little different. You get new courts for all the games, so you can see the difference. feel the difference. So really, it was just about putting a spark into the regular season. And to me, the bonus is, like I said, you don't have to play any extra games to do it. Unfortunately, the Raptors are out. They're eliminated. They'll still play the scheduled games in the in-season tournament, but they're out as far as having a chance to get to Vegas.
DeMar DeRozan got a little bit peeved the other night about what he felt was a disrespectful last couple of seconds from the Raptors. But in these in-season tournaments, you know, the more points you get, the better your chances you stand on a tiebreaker. Did he have reason to be upset, Leo?
Okay, well, just think about that. If he says his points matter, then, hey, I remember playing in Europe or even FIBA with Canada. I mean, instead of winning by 25, you win by 30. Instead of by 30, you win by 35 because points matter. So if DeMar is making a point that points matter, then the Raptors should try to get every last point they could. So it's a dumb argument on his part. And it's something that kind of, at this stage of the game, is just stupid to me. Because I watch all these guys. It happened, you know, when the Raptors played in Boston, and they lost in Boston. And the Celtics called a review of a play at the end of the game when they were, you know, the game was over. They won the game. And they called a review. And everybody on the Raptors side was ticked off. Like, how could you do this, right? And I'm going, wait a minute. If you cared that much, what did you do for the last 44 minutes of the game? You know, like if you're so worried about what something happens at the end of the game when you just got your butt kicked, why weren't you worried about, you know, playing with a different level of intensity earlier on? And same thing with Chicago. I mean, you know, they look like they're dysfunctional right now, and they look like they were disinterested for good parts of the game. But at the end of the game, somebody scores and you're making a big deal about it. To me, that's just stupid, you know, and it's, you know, finish the game. Who cares? You score an extra basket. Who cares? It's going to affect the betting line more than it's going to affect anything else.
Naz, got a couple of minutes left. Last question or comment for Leo.
Yeah, Leo, I've been following Oklahoma City with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Do they have to win this thing? Because they look excellent.
You're breaking up there. I don't know if I heard all that.
I think Naz's phone's breaking up. I think what he was saying, Oklahoma City with our great Canadian, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, they're playing phenomenal. Do they have a shot?
I don't think they have a shot to win a championship, but they're a playoff team. I tell you what, for years everybody's trying to figure out what Sam Presti is doing in Oklahoma City because he's got more draft picks than half the teams combined. And, you know, he just keeps loading up and loading up. And but now you're starting to see something happen. And it does start at the head of the snake. I mean, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is an elite player. He's an MVP caliber player. And his impact on that team is tremendous. They also got that young fella, Chet Holmgren, who's, you know, seven-footer that plays, does guard-like things out there, yet still plays and protects the basket and does all kinds of things up front. So, there's a lot of youth on this team. There's a lot of talent. They play together. They're well coached. They play hard, and they're winning games. So, you know, I think this team, it definitely is a very good regular season team if they stay healthy, especially Shai. Come to postseason, you know, it comes down to experience, and they still have some learning to do, but it's impressive to see where they are and where Shai and Lugans Dort, you know, another Canadian. You know, Lugans has had a tremendous career so far in his young NBA days, and you know, he's been a big part of what they're doing as well.
Anyways, Leo, we're going to thank you. Thanks so much for taking the time for us. Raptors got a game tonight against the Cavaliers, if I'm not mistaken, and we wish them the best. And always a pleasure having you on, sharing your insights and your passion for basketball. Thanks, Leo.
My pleasure. Have a good one, guys.
Leo Robbins. Naz, Lou, we've got about a minute left, minute and a half. Huge game for the Bills today. They're taking on the Philadelphia Eagles. In Philadelphia, Naz, size the game up for us.
Well, it's a team that Philadelphia, it's 9-1. It shouldn't be 9-1. It should be, have lost a couple of more games. It's going to be a tough task for the Bills, but I think they got a shot. The offensive changes they've made, they got a shot.
Yeah, they looked. Bills seemed to look better last week against the Jets. Louis, Bills, Eagles. What's your assessment?
Well, they played the Jets last weekend. I guess that's the answer. You know, I think if as long as Josh Allen keeps everything simple, I think they got a chance to go a long way. Mind you, you know, they've got a lot of tough games coming up right now, and their season is probably going to come down to, I think, the next three weekends. They can't go any further down in the losses than they are right now.
Yeah, well, leave it at that. We've got to head off the air. It's 10 o'clock. Going to thank our producer, Dan Christakos. We've been doing this all remotely today, so he's managed to keep us on the air without any technological hitches whatsoever. Thanks, Dan. Naz, as always, I give you the last word.
Whatever happened to Rocky Saganuck?
We'll Google that right after the show. To all our listeners, have a fantastic and safe week. We'll be back again next Sunday morning.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.